Good morning. And thank you to the children for that lovely song. And thank you to the children and young people in this room today. Your presence is so special and so important to really fulfill and fill up this space with your joy. So Michael Bernard Beckwith writes that there is a lie that acts like a virus within the mind of humanity, and that lie is, there's not enough good to go around. There's lack and there's limitation and there's just not enough. The truth is that there's more than enough good to go around. There's more than enough creative ideas. There's more than enough power. There's more than enough love. There's more than enough joy. All of this begins to come through a mind that is aware of its own infinite nature. There's enough for everyone, he writes. If you believe it, if you can see it, if you can act from it, it will show up for you. That is the truth. We often think of abundance as some sort of amount or quantity, as something that there is or something that is not there. If I have a lot of something, I have an abundance of it. And likewise, the opposite becomes true. If I lack something, if I don't have enough, then there is a deficit. But that's not quite what abundance is. That's actually more of the foundation for the idea of scarcity. So how do we transform abundance by approaching it not as an amount or quantity, but as something created through and by each of us? Tisquantum did not give the pilgrims abundance. He guided the pilgrims to tap into the land which they had claimed without respect, regard, or knowledge of the abundance within it. So what if, rather than a measurement, we approach abundance as something that we tap into, as a system of which we are a part? In Unitarian Universalism, our first source of faith is the direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. This source is beautifully reflected in the practice and the promise of permaculture. The word permaculture is literally a fusion of the words permanent, agriculture, and in some newer understandings, the word culture. It's a method of approaching life that mimics the way that nature interacts with itself. So our dominant society is drenched in the scarcity that was mentioned above, but permaculture is a response. It's a response to the unsustainability ways of scarcity. And those ways drench our society in the idea that it is every man for himself. It also influences everything that we do, from the goods and the food that we produce to the ways that we interact with one another in relationship. So this system of permaculture can be used on farms to produce goods, but it can also be used in human understanding. So for example, rather than that rugged individualism which promotes a type of dog-eat-dog mentality, permaculture encourages community building. This is a holistic approach which promotes the inherent abundance of the systems of the earth, including our human system. While it has many different meanings and understandings, most people can agree on some basic permaculture principles. In fact, David Holmgren, he's a leader in that movement, he has 13 principles that guide his work. Don't worry, we're only going to focus on three. The first permaculture principle is to observe and interact. In other words, to build and sustain community. The primal need for connection to one another puts us at odds with the every person for themselves, rugged individual mindset that dominates and controls our society. The idea that there's not enough for everyone, or that we must do everything we can to get everything we can, is not only destructive to our environment, which we are currently seeing, but it's also destructive to our very being. Folks really love the Darwinian principle of survival of the fittest, or competition in nature. In fact, this social Darwinism has been used to justify all kinds of ill treatment of people and of the planet. But what we also know is that nature is far more cooperative than it is competitive. It has to be. Does the flower only think of itself, worried and afraid? If so, then how does it so freely give of its nectar to the bee? More interestingly, the flower doesn't give anything. Rather, it provides what it produces. There's no concept of owning or giving. It just does what it's here to do. Which leads us to the next principle, which is to catch and store energy, or what we in the faith business call spiritual practice. Now, spiritual practice is a kind of confusing term across faith traditions, especially in more progressive faith traditions, which don't tell you what to believe, and especially for UUs, because what even is spirituality? How do we practice it? Whose do we practice? And questions of the sort. So many people encounter that phrase, and visions of floating lotus ohms come to mind. Others, it brings to mind ideas of determination and discipline, but more than anything, spiritual practice works a lot like feeding ourselves. We feed ourselves for nourishment so that we can have the energy that we need to get through the day and also for wellness. But we also feed ourselves for pleasure. It's an act with dual purposes. Such are many acts in life, and such is spiritual practice. And through our spiritual practices, whatever they may be, we catch and we store spiritual energy. I can get to a place of great clarity and oneness through meditation, but I don't live on a mountaintop. I live a full human life. Spiritual practices build reserves of spiritual strength and resilience, making us stronger and making us more resilient so that we can share those gifts with those around us every day, even when we are not achieving a level of oneness. So it was in an environmental geology class in college that the phrase, "there is no such place as a way," really landed on me for the first time. This understanding is a good way to sum up our final and third principle, which is, produce no waste. Now, this is a really hard concept in terms of everyday and modern living. It takes a lot of planning and practice, and so it is also in regards to our lives and ourselves. We want to get rid of that which is painful, that which we don't like, that which we deem unuseful and unnecessary. We want the light without the dark, or we want to speed through the darkness to get through the light. We want the smelly residues of our failures to go away and leave us, but where would it go? Instead, just as in the physical realm, we end up heaping our unwanted thoughts, feelings, and misfortunes, embarrassments, and the like into the landfill of our hearts and minds. But nothing is wasted in the human experience, and that's the good news. Nothing is wasted. That relationship that didn't work, that friendship that fell apart, that embarrassment, those demons from our past that linger in the corners of our mind, our shortcomings, our faults, none of it is waste. We learn from Tis Quantum to harvest our wounds. We invite our demons to dinner. We embrace our pain, and in the spirit of abundance, we allow it all to transform to energy that emboldens and strengthens our spirit. Those wounds, the hurt, the waste, it's all a part of our inner ecosystem, that mini planet that resides within each of us. So we need that waste. We need that waste so that we can transform it into the rich and the fertile soil from which our full selves can begin to emerge and grow. What we learn from permaculture is that abundance is not an object that you can touch or hold on to. In fact, that's the scarcity mindset that urges us to objectify that which is shapeless and formless, that which is transcendent. Instead, abundance is living. It lives in the act of co-creation, the co-creation of ourselves, our communities, and our planet. Abundance is living and breathing within each of us, and much like our true and our higher selves, Abundance is always there waiting to be embraced. May it ever abundantly be so. Amen.